afternoon, and welcome to the only show you need to get you through your Tuesday, to get you through this crisis in a world where so few things feel reliable. We are reliable. It's the Jason Rand Show. We're live on AM 770 KTTH. We are streaming right now live on the KTTH smartphone app. We got a lot to get to. We only have 2 hours left to do it. Mayor Jenny Durkin takes on socialist Seattle City Councilwoman Shama Sawan. Is that the right move? Shelby Talcott from the Daily Caller is going to stop by to give us an update on New York City's version of CHOP. Plus, Flyer calls for Tri-Cities to have their sort of Independence Day. Independence Day from the tyrant of Jay Inslee. Does that go too far? We're going to explore that during the Big Local. This hour of the Jason Rand Show is brought to you by the Todd Herman Show. Weekday morning, 6 to 9, right here on KTTH. That's how I wake up. That's how you should wake up as well. A lot of news happening all around the world and right here at home. So let's find out what's trending.
What's trending in Seattle?
Protesters aren't to blame for the spread of the coronavirus. This according to the very same public health officials that encourage people to go to the protesters. Go to the protests. Now, if this was something that doesn't get taken seriously, I guess we could laugh at something like this. At this nonsense. But unfortunately, there are a lot of people who are believing this. Not all of them. Not everyone takes this ridiculous, ludicrous position. According to the Seattle Times, a working paper yet to be peer-reviewed from the National Bureau of Economic Research analyzed data from protests in 315 large cities and found, quote, no evidence that urban protests reignited COVID-19 case growth during the more than 3 weeks following the protest. Now, the study also cited evidence that protests prompted more stay-at-home behavior by those who didn't go to the protests. So in other words, not only was there not an increase in coronavirus cases as a result of tens of thousands of people in one city going out and marching, it actually prevented the COVID spread.
This is ridiculous.
That is what they're believing.
This is so bad.
Come on! Come on! So the political position that these public health officials support and wanted you to take prompted less COVID cases. Do you really believe that?
I want to laugh, but I can't.
Do you really want to believe that? When conservatives protested, what happened? We were warned. Stay inside. Get away from the Capitol. You want grandma to die. You're going to cause another spread. That's what they said. But when Black Lives Matter protesters took to the streets, oh, it's all good. You know, wear a mask, but you're fine. It's outdoors, not that big of a deal. According to Dr. Jeff Duchin, the health officer here in King County, he said the data may be imperfect, but neither here in King County or elsewhere in the country, where healthcare authorities are looking, have been able to document that or find strong evidence of that. He was one of the people who I believe said go out and protest. Dr. Jared Batten, vice dean at the UW School of Public Health, who, by the way, went to a march donning a mask on June 12th, said, I would say that outside makes a big difference because of much more air circulation. So, okay. They're either lying or choosing to look at data in a dishonest way because they support the big picture movement and can justify it. Or, how about this? Rather than laugh at this, let's call their bluff. Let's call their bluff. If you're telling me that tens of thousands of people, and by the way, the one that he participated at, the Dr. Jared Batten, he went out to the March 12th protest that had about 60,000 people in Seattle show up. So if that doesn't spread the coronavirus, cool. It's awesome. That's great. Let's continue to go outside. Let's reopen some of the outdoor recreation. In Seattle, you're not allowed to play tennis. You can't play tennis because you might touch a tennis ball that your partner touched who has COVID. But you can go to a 60,000 strong march? Really? Let us call the bluff. You're either lying about the data or you're overplaying the threat of the coronavirus. You can't have it both ways. In this case, it's either or. This is so ludicrous. This is so ludicrous. And it seems incredibly transparent what they're doing here. Just come out and say, you know what? It probably did spread some coronavirus cases. We are, in fact, seeing a surge right now. But what we know about the coronavirus is that for the vast majority of people who get it, it's not at all deadly. And we believe the cause is worth the risk of getting the coronavirus. I can't argue with that. Not really. Not from a public health standpoint. I was like, okay, fine. You think that it's worth the risk. Fair enough. That's subjective. Maybe someone else says the same thing. Maybe someone else says the opposite. Maybe someone's like, yeah, maybe. But it is so transparent. Meanwhile, Jenny Durkin, mayor of Seattle, she issued a letter today, early this morning, calling on the Seattle City Council to open an investigation into the socialist council member Shama Sawant, with the possibility of expelling her from the council. In this letter, she points to what she calls, quote, disorderly or otherwise contemptuous behavior, as if that's new, coming from Sawant. Among the allegations are that she violated city hiring rules by giving decision-making authority to Socialist Alternative, which we reported on last year. The city knew about it last year. They did nothing. They asked her, the council, to look into the fact that she allowed a crowd of protesters inside a city hall in early June at a time where it violated the COVID policies. Well, we know that that's nonsense. Allegations she led a march to the mayor's home over the weekend. Durkin's address is redacted in official documents over threats made against her when she was serving as the U.S. attorney. The letter says that Sawant's followers vandalized Durkin's home, quote, by spray painting obscenities. And she is demanding an investigation to determine whether or not they should take any action. As of right now, at least, Sawant nor anybody else on the council responded. They're not going to do anything. They're going to do absolutely nothing. They may not like Sawant because she is, as a politician, morally bankrupt and odious in her views and the way she goes about her activism. But she also speaks to a group of protesters that people like Teresa Mosqueda, who, remember, is going to be running for mayor, they're counting on that base to put them in other positions of power. You do not have the votes, whatever it ends up being, on the council to make this move. She's not going anywhere. And this was strategically weird, politically speaking, for Durkin to put out this letter today, because she's going to give bad faith activists the opportunity to say, look, Durkin doesn't even care about what's going on at CHOP. She's focused on Shama Sawant. And then you just make a bigger martyr out of Sawant. She's a professional victim. You can say, oh, look, the activist class, the big picture Democrats, the big money Democrats, the activist Democrats, the establishment, they're coming after you, the movement. Why give her that? The IRS is increasing the number of officers in Washington state, and if you owe money, they're going to come for you. So don't try to take on the IRS yourself. Contact our local tax expert and advocate, Greg Nunn at Nunn Better Tax Resolution. N-U-N-N, Nunn Better Tax Resolution. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending at home?
With the state budget facing a rather massive deficit thanks to the coronavirus economic slowdown, it seems pretty clear the Democrats will be pushing for more taxes. So what exactly is their plan? Joining me on the line to discuss is Jason Mercier. He is the director for the Center for Government Reform over at the Washington Policy Center. Jason, you've been sort of digging into this. Not shockingly, the idea for a capital gains tax is coming out of Seattle. So what have you learned?
Yeah, the thing about this debate that's kind of surprising is, for some reason, Washington state officials are unable to grasp the fact that everybody in the world knows, and that is, capital gains are income and a tax on them are an income tax. This is not controversial. The IRS makes this clear. Every state in the country makes this clear. Yet for some reason, Washington hasn't gotten that message. And now, thanks to public records, we understand why they are taking this approach. And in fact, one of the proponents of this just basically said, we don't care if it's an income tax.
So what is the argument that you were able to find out? And I know that a lot of this came from State Senator Peterson of Seattle.
Well, what we have been warning about is, from a policy standpoint, it makes no sense to just tax capital gains. And in fact, no state or city in the country has a standalone capital gains tax. because it's the most volatile part of personal income. This is what drives the problems in our neighbors in Oregon and California. So why would they be proposing a tax on something they can't depend on? Well, thanks to these public records, we know that the motivation for this is if they pass this, they know they will immediately be sued for violating the Constitution, the prohibition on a graduated income tax. But that's kind of their goal, just like the city of Seattle in 2017. They want to be sued, and they want to see if they can get the Supreme Court to overturn all their prior rulings saying that you own your income, and then you don't need a constitutional amendment anymore for a graduate income tax.
So it, obviously, as a strategy, it's unethical. But as a strategy, politically speaking, isn't it a smart move by the Democrats? Because, I mean, that's just their game plan.
Well, I suppose it's a smart move if you have no belief that you should uphold your oath to honor the laws
of
the state of Washington.
Jason, you know that they don't. You know that they don't, especially Democrats in Seattle when it comes to this particular issue. They have no quarrels about being openly in defiance of the Constitution.
The bottom line on this is if you want an income tax from the state of Washington, have an honest conversation with the voters. The reason why they don't is the voters have already rejected six constitutional amendments to do this, which is a pretty clear message that the state of Washington doesn't want to go down this road. Trying to set up lawsuits and trying to get the judges to do something the voters won't, there is just something fundamentally wrong with that.
What do you think the response would be from King County voters in particular, who overwhelmingly vote Democratic, and certainly in Seattle specifically, they overwhelmingly vote either progressive or socialist? Do you think that a move like this would end up weirdly being rewarded, or do you think it would be punished?
It's hard to see how individuals are going to respond to what their elected officials do. I just know, especially as a government reform director, somebody interested in good policy for the state of Washington, there's a proper way to do this. And in fact, the state Supreme Court told lawmakers back in 1960 mm-hmm. how to do this, because they kept trying to get the judges to change their mind. And the judges finally had enough of it and said, stop asking us. We meant what we said. Income is property. If you want a graduate income tax, amend the Constitution. That's the way that this has to happen.
Jason Mercier is the director for the Center for Government Reform over at the Washington Policy Center, washingtonpolicy.org, if you want to learn more about the great work that they're doing. Do you have any fears that under the makeup of this Supreme Court that the response would be different?
I don't think so, because we have a pretty good indication just this year that same court rejected hearing Seattle's income tax case. That was basically the opportunity to see if they're going to change their minds, and they refused to even consider the case.
But didn't they have a mixed record on that one? Go ahead.
I would say that they have consistently ruled the same. And the reason for this, if you look at Washington's Constitution, it says property is everything subject to ownership. And either you own your income or you don't. It can't get any clearer than that.
So, last question then. Obviously, there is going to be a significant deficit. Where should the money come from? Where is it going to be made up? What's the recommendation?
Well, there are three things to look at for this current problem. And that $9 billion you hear of is split up over 3 years. So the immediate one is that $4.5 billion. We have about a $3 billion reserve. That takes you down to $1.5 billion. There's still the possibility of getting probably not a bailout from Congress, but maybe flexibility for that original CARES Act money. Mm-hmm. So maybe you can get up $1 billion there. And now you're looking at about $500 million problem. We know on July 1st, significant spending increases are taking effect. So just don't allow that new spending increase to go in, and don't start new programs.
Short of that, which I don't think the governor is going to approve of, maybe they'll make some small cuts. And we've seen some of the furloughs starting, at least the plans coming forward. But short of that, is there anything that very concretely the Republican Party can do to at least highlight some of the fiscal policy that we tend to do really, really well, but don't get a lot of coverage of?
Well, you know, the opportunity to enact these savings is before the new fiscal year started, which again is July 1st. So with us basically blowing past that deadline, I'm not so sure they're going to have a special session anymore. I think they may just wait to see what happens over the summer with Congress and the election in November and dive into this next January, which makes the problem so much harder to solve.
Yeah.
But I think it's important, as you've seen from the state treasurer and others calling for immediate action, the sooner you solve this problem,
mm-hmm.
it's never going to be easy. But if you, the longer you wait, the deeper those reductions have to be.
To learn more about this process and really take a dive into all the wonky, nerdy, but entertaining still policy papers, go over to WashingtonPolicy.org, WashingtonPolicy.org. We've been talking with Jason Mercier. He's the director for the Center for Government Reform over at the WPC. Thank you so much, Jason, for stopping by. Really appreciate it.
Okay, thank you, Jason.
Absolutely. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending? National.
So their own version of CHOP or CHAZ or whatever you want to call it is happening right now in New York City. You can actually hear some of the noise in the background because my next guest is there documenting exactly what's going on in New York. Joining me on the line is the media reporter for the Daily Caller, Shelby Telcott. Shelby, thank you so much for coming on.
Glad to be here.
So, you went from CHOP to, I think, D.C. and then to New York City, but you have a general sense of sort of what's going on the ground amidst all this chaos. Give us just a general first debriefing on what exactly is happening in New York City.
Yeah, so the a bunch of protesters pretty much just set up camp across the street from City Hall. They're demanding at least $1 billion be taken away from the NYPD budget. It's very crowded inside the area, not super friendly towards anyone filming, not friendly towards cops, obviously, and they're anxiously waiting for the decision from the city council on what the budget's going to be.
How does that situation compare to what you experienced here in Seattle at CHOP?
So at first, I thought it was definitely a lot calmer than CHOP. As you know, you were there too. There's a lot more guns in CHOP, a lot more people mishandling firearms. There were fights at night, but then actually last night, it was a very similar atmosphere in terms of hostility and tension. A big group of protesters actually tried to expand their zone, and there were fights breaking out among them. We actually ended up getting, my coworker got his phone taken away. He managed to grab it back, but we got pretty much chased out of the area for filming.
Yeah, they definitely don't like it when you film their behavior, their violence, because they like to pretend that there's no violence going on. And you and I both know that that's, of course, not the case.
Yeah, you know, it's actually funny you mentioned that, because on one of our videos that we have towards the end, you can hear one of the females telling me, you know, oh, it's okay to... We want you to bring your phone out for police violence, but with, you know, with when we're fighting amongst ourselves, like, no, that doesn't look good for us. And you know what? The bad thing is some of the journalists I've talked to, of course, I don't know where they're working or if they're, you know, independent journalists or what. I spoke to two of them who agreed that, oh, we just have to do what the protesters want. But, you know, my feeling is I report the good stuff. There's plenty of good things going on and protesters doing the right things. But of course, that's not the whole story.
And the problem with that strategy and that giving in to the protesters, which I presume in many cases is driven by the reporters' own bias and they want these areas to work, is that when you pretend the violence isn't happening, no one's showing up to stop the violence, which means it continues. And then in the case, of course, here in Seattle, you have two teenagers who have been murdered as a result and four other men, all of whom, by the way, are African-American, getting injured in gun violence. And I kept on thinking about what the reality on the streets would be if folks were more honest about the violence and put the energy into preventing it rather than simply pretending it doesn't exist.
Yeah, so there's always, you know, one or two people who are for sure trying to de-escalate situations, but there's always those people who don't care. And the problem is in every, you know, they're calling this a revolution. And if it is truly a revolution in every revolution, things are not always, you know, rainbow and sunshine. And it's unrealistic to expect that. So, you know, infighting and that is almost a part of it, in my opinion. So
who's actually there? What is the makeup of the area, this autonomous zone?
So compared to CHOP, I definitely think this area is, you know, in CHOP, I thought there was for sure several different groups.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we saw BLM, we saw Antifa, we saw a bunch of people there for different agendas. Here, it does seem to be far more focused on Black Lives Matter. There's a few, you know, sort of fringe people, definitely, but it's definitely a little bit more organized than I saw out in Seattle.
Well, I'm going to continue to monitor the situation via the work you're doing, which means I don't have to do anything but just look at your Twitter feed. To follow Shelby on at Twitter, just look up Shelby Talcott, T-A-L-C-O-T-T, over on at Twitter. She's the media reporter for The Daily Caller. Thank you so much for spending some time with us. Really appreciate it.
Of course. Thanks for having me on.
Absolutely. You're listening to The Jason Rand Show. When we come back, we're going to take a dive into the big local. We're heading on over to the Tri-Cities for a piece of activism that is happening this weekend. We'll get into it and so much more when we return on The Jason Rand Show.
Yelp, Tacoma, Bremerton, Bothell.
This is The Big Local on The Jason Rand Show.
Redmond, Sumner, Kent.
Stories about you, not about Seattle.
Hey, look at the time. It's 4:30 on a weekday afternoon. You know what that means. It means it's time for The Big Local. Here's how this works. The media here is hyper-focused on the city of Seattle, and they end up spending way too much time on Seattle, ignoring you guys and where you live. So weekday afternoons at 4:30, we talk only about the communities you live in, and we completely ignore the city of Seattle. So let's start with the Tri-Cities. Activists angry with the pandemic policies are inviting folks to pack Columbia Park this coming weekend on July 5th to declare freedom from, quote, tyrannical leaders. The tyrannical leaders being Jay Inslee and others imposing their coronavirus restrictions on them. But according to the Tri-City Herald, city officials are hoping people will do so safely. According to a flyer that's gone up, it says on July 6th, we will no longer be social distancing or wearing masks. If you have underlying conditions, please feel free to wear a mask, hazmat suit, or stay home. As citizens of this country, we will no longer be slaves to our own government. When government can no longer govern, it is up to the people to restore order. Our soldiers did not die fighting for freedom just so we could be enslaved by our own politicians. So, we've had conversations on this show about this very issue, and I've been pretty consistent. I understand someone's reluctance to wear a mask. I do. I find masks to be uncomfortable. Although I found one that actually is really, really comfortable from Gray and May Company, which is local. They're based in Auburn. That aside, I get what people are saying. I do. But to go this far and make that kind of comparison, that this is a result of a tyrannical government, is very clearly going too far. It is. Let us at least be honest about what's going on. If you do not trust Jay Inslee's policies and you think they're bad, and by the way, he has given all of us reason to distrust all of his policies because of how political and inconsistent they've been applied. But disagreeing with the policy and claiming it is an example of a tyrannical leader is the equivalent of far leftists saying Donald Trump is a Nazi. That Donald Trump is a dictator. Trump is not acting like a dictator, and Inslee is not acting like a tyrant. Not yet, at least. You can certainly take a position that you don't like the direction that he's going, but to be clear and to be fair, because we try to do that on this show, Governor Inslee isn't throwing people in jail who aren't wearing masks, right? I mean, let's just, on the one basis, get on the same page here. Regardless of what you feel about the mandate and all of the mandates that that he's had, to be clear and to be fair and to be honest, no one is getting thrown in jail for not wearing a mask. I'm unaware of anyone getting a ticket so far in the entire state of Washington for not wearing a mask. There's been some action taken against some businesses. That part's true. That part's true. It's not tyrannical. You get to question it. You get to challenge it in court. And we've seen court challenges. We're still waiting to see how they come. Now, if a court goes ahead, and let's just talk about the water park in Chelan. I forget the name of it. They're basically suing. We have the Freedom Foundation on to discuss. And they took us through their argument about specifically the Department of Labor and Industries, L&I, essentially being weaponized to put a business out of business with cumbersome fees if they don't listen to the mandate of the governor. So let's say it goes into the court. The judge says, you know what? Chelan Water Park, Freedom Foundation, y'all are right. You're 100% correct. The governor is acting out. The governor has illegally or unconstitutionally weaponized LNI, and they can't move forward. LNI, stop. Inslee, stop. If that happened, and then the governor came in and said, you know what? I don't care what the court's saying. I'm going to continue. And if you don't listen to me, I'm throwing you in jail. If that happens, okay, I'm on board using the language of tyrannical. But we're not there yet. And I don't think we're going to be there. This whole idea of is that we will no longer be slaves to our own government. Again, you kind of already are, quote-unquote, slaves to your own government if you're following any of the laws. Someone putting on a seatbelt. We mandate that you wear a seatbelt. If you do not wear a seatbelt, what happens? You can get a ticket. Now, not everyone always gets a ticket when they don't wear a seatbelt. Sometimes they do. And I look at that example and I compare that to what essentially is going on with the masks. Someone is saying, I don't have to wear a mask because I'm not going to get sick. Okay, fine. But you can also make the argument in a car, you're not going to wear a seatbelt because you have a fully functioning airbag. And you drive by the speed limit. I don't hear a lot of folks far to the right, and I believe that people who take a position of this being quote-unquote tyrannical and actually meaning it tend to be further to the right than most folks on the right. You don't hear a bunch of people talking about the tyranny of wearing seatbelts. You just don't hear that. And on the right, what is something that we talk about creating laws as it relates to voting? We say you have to have a voter ID. We support voter ID laws. You have to have a driver's license, some kind of license, so we know whether or not you're actively participating legally in the right to vote. Obviously not in Washington because we have mail-in ballots, but across the country. If that law were to pass and someone on the left said, no, I'm not going to do it, this is an example of the tyrannical rule of law, we would all sit back and say, what are you talking? That's crazy. That's crazy. We're doing it because we want to ensure that people can safely participate in an election without fear that cheating is going to go on and we're going to put in power someone who didn't actually earn it. We would sit back and we'd say, you know what? You can have an argument against voter ID laws. Let's have that argument. Clearly, us on the right, we support voter ID laws for X, Y, and Z. And we have that debate. But we shouldn't be going, we wouldn't agree with this idea that because a law is on the books that we happen to disagree with, that it is an example of a tyrannical order. That just goes too far for me. And every single time folks talk about this issue in that way, all you're doing is turning off independents or moderates who might look to the Republican Party for some semblance of sanity at a time where there seems to be little. You have a whole bunch of people all across the country, primarily, or almost, I'm pretty sure exclusively, or almost exclusively, I'll give myself some cover, almost exclusively, all of this chaos is happening where? It's happening in Democratic-run cities. It's happening in Seattle, and Portland, and New York, and D.C., and Chicago, L.A., San Francisco. That's where it's happening. Conservatives aren't in charge there. No, I have to assume, as individuals are seeing what's going on the ground, they're seeing the statues being defaced and trampled, decapitated, thrown in rivers. They're seeing rioting and looting. They're seeing autonomous zones being set up. My assumption is someone who is kind of down the middle, an independent, sometimes votes Democrat, sometimes votes Republican, they're looking at that and they're being turned off. When they hear some crazy radical on the left saying we need to abolish the police and end all prisons, I assume they listen to that and say, that's nuts. I don't want to do anything to put people like that in power. And who is owning that movement? The left, Democrats. And so that person who's maybe listening and is that independent in, say, Bellevue or Squim or Port Orchard, they're looking at that and saying, okay, you know what? I'm going to give another look to the Republican Party. I want them to see a sane, non-hyperbolic response to what's going on. And that includes not just with the chaos, but having to do with the pandemic that reasonable people are concerned with. And so as we're trying to figure out who's going to be the nominee to take on Jay Inslee, who's responsible for the laws that a lot of folks don't like or the mandates that folks don't like, I want that independent to look to the right and say, oh, okay, they sound much saner than the crazies on the left. I'm going to go with them. Not just for governor, but for attorney general. For various state representatives that are running right now. And then, of course, in the next election, for members of Congress, mayors, council members. I want to make sure that they have access to sanity on our side. And with respect, claiming that we live in a tyranny and that we are a slave to the government because of a simple rule like wearing a mask when indoors, that doesn't cut it for me. Calling that tyranny. You can disagree all you want. And in a lot of cases, I'm going to join you in the disagreements. I think the governor has been a total disaster as it relates to the pandemic response. But the same way that I call out crazy people on the left for using Nazism and fascism in such a flippant and casual way, I'm going to hold us accountable as well. I'm going to say, if you are on the right and you're using the exact kind of language, but you just happen to be targeting a Democrat, doesn't make it any better. It makes it just as bad. And I am forever going to try to keep myself consistent on that, even if it might make some of you guys who are listening to me right now a little upset. I get it. I get it. You get to be upset. I don't get mad when people disagree with me. I get mad when people don't want to have the conversation, and usually that's on the left. But when it comes to this mask issue, I'm seeing some of the responses to my pieces on Twitter. And they don't want to have a conversation. They want to continue to use this kind of language. And again, if you want to use that kind of language, go for it. I just think it is counterproductive to the conservative cause. And right now, the biggest piece of activism that you should be focused on, with all due respect, has nothing to do with masks directly. It happens to do with the person who's putting the mandates in place. Focus your activism and your attention on getting a Republican elected. We can do it. We've got a lot of craziness that's happening right now. Craziness that should help Republicans gain some more power, especially here in Washington. There are areas in Washington state that are currently represented by a Democrat. You look in Snohomish County, for example. Snohomish County should be overwhelmingly red, and yet is it? You give a little bit of a pass to Everett because of the changing demographics, but should Maltby? Should Lake Stevens? Should that area be represented by a Democrat? No. So why is that the case right now? Well, we had Mark James on the other day. He's running for state representative. He's a Republican. 1-800-465-877 if you want to join the conversation. When we come back, we're going to talk with a YouTuber who had a very funny observation the other day. He happens to be a black Republican. He happened to be at the North Carolina State Capitol, and he happened to see a Black Lives Matter protest. But he happened to notice that literally every single person there was white. We're going to talk with Benji Irby, when we come back. You're listening to The Jason Rand Show. Welcome back to The Jason Rand Show on AM 770 KTTH and 94.5 FM on the Greater East Side. My next guest made an amusing, although somewhat alarming, observation at a North Carolina Black Lives Matter protest he saw or stumbled upon over at the state capitol. No black people. Rather ironic. Now, of course, he could have joined, but as a black Republican, he probably was not welcome. Benji Irby is the host of Unpopular Opinion. You can catch it on YouTube, and he joins me now. Benji, welcome to the show.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Doing well. I can't tell you how amused I was at this video you posted on Twitter, because I've noticed virtually the same thing, especially here in Seattle, as there are a whole bunch of protests all in the names of Black Lives Matter, except almost no black people are in attendance. It's overwhelmingly white. So take us through what happened to you over the weekend.
Yeah, what's so funny about that video over the weekend was that me and my friend, Shamika, I was down visiting her in North Carolina, and we had nothing to do on a Saturday, you know, with COVID and everything being kind of shut down-ish. I said, let's just go over to the state capitol. I love to visit state capitals, take pictures, and be like a total nerd. So I was like, let's go. And as I was going to try to park my car, I was driving around the state capitol, and I saw, like, this group of, like, white kids. I thought it was, like, some type of, like, you know, summer camp sort of like thing going on, or some type of like Boy Scout thing, or like a, maybe like a school thing. You see that a lot when you go to DC. And I drove around and I parked, and we walked on the grounds, and we started getting closer. And as we were walking down the little path, Shamika was like, is that Black Lives Matter? And I'm like, what? Is this like a Black Lives Matter protest? And I'm like, but there are no black people. And I'm like, I don't even like do like live videos. I said, but I have to like share this with people. This is like absolutely crazy. And there was a whole Black Lives Matter protest there. Not a single black person at all. So we were laughing at that, but also we were laughing at the irony that we, the two Trump-supporting black Republicans who are like, you know, known for this, are the two black people of all the 40 million black people in America that we are the two that would run into this thing. That's really what we were laughing at as well.
So how instructive was it to experience this? When you see something like this happen, do you say, okay, you know what, these are white people who care deeply about the black community, at least they're doing something? Or do you look at it and say maybe they need to have more black voices help instruct exactly what it is they're complaining about?
First of all, I mean, just, you know, as an aside, if you're going to have a Black Lives Matter protest, you'd like to have some black people there, just as you can't have a women's women's march with like a bunch of dudes. I'm just saying, you just kind of like, we started a protest, there's no black people, maybe we need to like, you know, chill. Maybe we need to do something else. I mean, but really what this is really about in all seriousness is that they take the term Black Lives Matter, which the generic term Black Lives Matter is great. Yeah, of course. I mean, Black Lives Matter, of course. All lives matter. I mean, we all matter. We're all, you know, good under God's sight, thank God. But the corporate movement of Black Lives Matter isn't about black lives. It's actually about blue elections. I mean, they're coordinating with Act Blue. We know this now. So it just doesn't make any sense that they're taking something that is a struggle of black people and manipulating black people's outrage again, you know, for an election. I'm sick of it. And if you even look at the fact of what happened with George Floyd, everybody from the dog catcher to the governor was also acting blue. So it's like, we're not even looking at the real issue. We're not even looking at the legislation that's happening in the House. We're not even looking at the fact that we have Tim Scott trying to work with Karen Bass to actually do something about the situation. It then turns out to be about Trump. But this is all happening, most of it, in Democrat districts. And instead of actually instructing people and letting them know what's going on as far as actually making a change, we have to go out here and act the fool and knock down statues. Yeah. My friend, for example, my sister's friend's husband was a guy who in Portsmouth, Virginia, the statue knocked down and knocked on his head. And he's like in a coma. And this man has children. And I know at the time, this seemed like, you know, get white supremacy. But really? Is this what we're doing now? I'm just really sick of black people's emotions being played by the Democrat Party. This is the reason why I can never be a Democrat. This is the reason why I voted for President Trump. I can never go back to a party that prioritizes illegal immigrants over black Americans and over all Americans in general. It's ridiculous. And the shame that we saw of this protest just shows you that when they run out of black people, they'll just put white people in their place. This is not even about black lives. This is about Trump. This is about let's do something to keep things going while we have Biden in a basement somewhere, obviously, because his brain is yellow. He can't come out and say anything. So we have to do the summer of 68 all over again, because that's where all these Democrats are from anyway, our Nancy Pelosi's and people like that who've been around forever. Let's just reenact this whole thing. We get a lot of drama going, and maybe, just maybe, we can get Biden in. That's what this is all about, and black people are being used for, and I'm just really sick of it.
Benji Irby is the host of Unpopular Opinion. If you go to unpopbenji.com, you can learn more. You can also just look up Unpopular Opinion on YouTube. You know, you are presumably to the left. You're on the wrong side of the issue. As a black guy who supports Trump, that is clearly wrong. Why does that belief still seem to be a commonly held belief amongst the black community? Or am I wrong? Is that maybe not believed to be the case anymore?
Well, I'll actually tell you, and also since we were giving out stuff, you can follow me on Twitter too at Real Benji Irby. I'm a big Twitterite. Anyway, the reason for that, to be honest with you, and this is actually something that I've talked to Trump people about. I've actually had meetings with people in the Trump family and Trump, you know, administration, whatever. Mm-hmm. And one thing I've always told them is that the thing that has to be gotten to is all of the racial allegations from back in the day. The racial allegations from back in the day, even going back to you know, the '70s situation with him not wanting to rent to black people, allegedly. And there's so many more things and layers to that story. You know, the prosecution actually putting someone up to say these things about him for threat of them being arrested. There's, and even going back to Central Park 5, there's like a narrative where they're saying that Trump wanted five black men to be executed. Trump has never said this ever anywhere. Well, this is a popular belief that people believe. And I've told them time and time and time again, if you do not attack these initial racial things, these are the initial racial things where the whole pile on comes in. That everything Trump does is racist because of these two things and other things like this. until you guys actually get this head on, you're going to always have a racial crowd over you. I always say Trump is always with three R's of Trump. They have Russia, rapist, racist. Russia didn't work. Rapist didn't work. So now all they have until November is racist. And if this election becomes about race, unfortunately, that's what gives Joe Biden a chance. I told them in 2019 that this whole 2020, they're going to do racial incident after racial incident, blown up, blown up, blown up. This is going to be a very long summer. They are not playing games. They are doing whatever they can to get Donald Trump out. And race is their strongest tool, and they're using it. So until President Trump goes back and really confronts these things the way that he can, because I believe that President Trump is a good man. I've done my research on these things. He is not a racist. Look at his policies. What racist is going to fund the HBCUs indefinitely? What racist is going to buck people in his own party like John Cotton to do prison reform? He is not a white supremacist. Meanwhile, you have Barack Obama, Hillary Clinton, and Joe Biden eulogizing an actual white supremacist in John Byrd, Robert Byrd. Is crazy. We have the truth on our side, but these things are not being explained to black people, and this is why we're in the conundrum that we are in, unfortunately, and I just sit back, I look at it, I pray, I'm voting for President Trump, obviously, I support the man, but I do understand why black people feel the way they feel, and I feel that a lot of the black conservatives that we hear from a lot, not saying any names, they don't have an understanding, and they are not attracting black people to our side, unfortunately, and we have been rightfully doing the right things toward the black community, but unfortunately, President Trump's not really getting credit for it that he deserves.
For more analysis like this, of course, you can check out Benji Irby on Twitter, Real Benji Irby, or go to unpopbenji.com, or of course, just head on over to YouTube and search Unpopular Opinion. That is the name of the video podcast that Benji hosts. Benji Irby, thank you so much for stopping by. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. You're listening to The Jason Rand Show. We're back with more right after this on KTTH.